Hakeem, man, thank you so much for joining me.
It's good to be here, Alec, man.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Good to have you here, dude. Yeah. I'm excited for this conversation, and I want to preface this by saying, like, this conversation could get, I don't want to say a little bit dark. That's not the case. But the factual information that will be relayed here can be a little bit jarring to people who've not considered the implications of what will be relayed here. And with that being said, the whole purpose of this conversation is also to guide it to solutions, which you've developed, and we'll get into that. But could you just start by introducing yourself? First, do you disagree with anything I just said there?
No, it's true. But you know, on every side of the coin, there's a darkness. You got to become aware of that to move towards the light. How are you going to do anything about the problems if you don't know about them? Just live in ignorance. So yeah, I mean, and I think that's what the way forward does so well. Just to tell you a little bit about myself, man, I was awake since college. And
what woke you up?
What woke me up? A friend, a good friend and mentor. We were music producers together, ironically enough. And then one day he's like, hey, do you know about Raytheon? And he's like, do you know about the military industrial complex? And so I ended up getting a dual degree. I started researching conspiracies. You know, I was really excited that there was a truth out there that was being hidden, right? And really, really seeing the structure of the world and how it wasn't serving people. It seemed to be serving a small group of people. Really, it seemed to be anti-human by design. So a lot of that darkness pulled out of me. I questioned, why am I going to college? Why am I doing any of this, right? And really tempered in my rebel attitude that I had at the time. So I was, by day, I was studying about databases, you know, learning technology. By night, I was reading about deep underground military bases and just getting my mind blown, right? So I was on this journey and it was very dark for a while. And then I started being exposed to spiritual texts too, which was most exciting to me. One thing that comes to mind is Armistice Day. And I was reading about how Armistice Day, you know, World War One, it's officially the end of World War One, and angel numbers galore, November 11th at the 11th hour. So people knew about Armistice Day before they even heard the news. It was like a shift in consciousness at that day. Yeah. And, you know, eventually it got rebranded to Veterans Day here in the U.S. or Memorial Day. There was a very purposeful reason for doing that, because events like that can raise humanity's consciousness. So I learned about that. I learned about the Schumann resonance and how that is aligned with our consciousness and the feelings we're feeling. And I decided, hey, I want to be a spiritual software engineer at the time. So I was learning about different things. I wanted to build this app that tied to the Schumann resonance and was actually tracking people's feelings, like love or fear, on a map, so you could see it in real time, kind of like a heat map. There's other things I built. I built this, if you know about like divination through pendulums, I built that through a phone's accelerometer, so you could kind of calibrate it and use the phone as a truth-telling device.
Wow.
Yeah, that was a fun one. I realized just use a pendulum, but it was cool to do that, right? And I kept trying. So I call myself a spiritual serial entrepreneur, and I kept going until the current day.
Got it. Cool.
Yeah.
So how did that land you with Above?
Yeah. Well, in 2019, I was working in New York City. I'd worked for big tech for a lot of the times, and under the surface, I was really upset. You know, from previous jobs, I'd actually gotten sabotaged for being a conspiracy theorist. And it was interesting. I'd seen how these big tech companies work behind the scenes. I was a dev for a major health firm, and I saw that I had access to production data that was health data. So I was seeing like a social security number for a kid, a sick kid who's 8 years old. And I was like, man, this is a gross feeling. And if I ever do this one day, I want to do better. And so in 2019, I started connect with Derek Rose, who, you know, really inspiring force in my life. And he was like, hey, do you want to help out with this website? And I was like, all right, sure, let's do it. So that was the Freedom Cell Network, as you know of. And then I kind of the script flipped, and I found myself, man, I have access to like a Facebook like data system. I could see people's locations, their profiles, who they're talking to. And I was like, wow, this is sacred. I have to steward this data. I have to do everything possible in my power to protect this data. So I kind of just went on a journey. How can we take this important work that we're doing in the world and hold that data sacred and stand in our power? So I really went down the rabbit hole of privacy and online surveillance because I wanted my team to be on a solid footing. Mm-hmm. So we figured out solutions to communicate with each other, video conferences, messaging, file sharing, all that kind of stuff. And at the end of it, it was a volunteer crew. But, you know, at the end of the people's reset, we were like, we should carry this onwards. Maybe we could provide it as a solution to others. So we started Above as a company in 2021 and have been doing really well since. We do phones, laptops, and different types of services.
Awesome. Okay, before we get into the solution that is Above, mm-hmm. I want to sort of frame the issue. I don't think people realize the depth of the corruption within big tech companies. And I say that while recognizing my audience is probably listening to me like, what are you talking about? Of course we realize big tech mm-hmm. is corrupt. And again, I want to emphasize, I don't think people realize the depth of corruption with big tech companies when it comes to data, security, surveillance, et cetera, et cetera. So can you just share some information that you've uncovered in your research related to that, which led you to develop the solution that is Above?
Yeah, totally. I mean, you're spot on. I think most people know that these big tech companies are corrupt. I mean, heck, you say something, you get an ad for it an hour later.
Dude, you think something, you get an ad.
You think something, right? Are they reading our thoughts?
This relates ironically, and I didn't intend for it to. The episode mm-hmm. that I recorded just before this mm-hmm. one got into, I don't know if you're familiar with Sabrina Wallace, but got into Sabrina Wallace's work and the Internet of Bodies, Internet of Things, how supposedly the government and communications companies have the ability and have known about the ability to measure and read our biofield, which I don't want to say definitively, but possibly means that they can measure what we are thinking in some way too, which I do not discount with Bluetooth and things like this.
Yeah, it's not just that too, for the whole, if there are nanobots inside of us, which people believe, not just read our thoughts, but then react to that and make us feel a certain way for thinking certain things, which would be, you know, their most amazing dream, their wet dream. That would be their wet dream. Orwell couldn't have predicted it. And that's a scary thought. But I think that with online surveillance, it's a slippery slope. There's a lot of people talking about it online. It's really important not to give them the power that they haven't proven, right? Amen. People can say all these things, but we're just jumping to conclusions unless it's really widely known. The second thing is, even if there is nanotech inside of us or graphene quantum dots or whatever, it can be detoxed out.
Yes.
We have to trust in that.
Amen.
Yeah. And so with digital surveillance, it became obvious to me, like, it's kind of a new field. I think when the internet was created, you know, it was obviously created as an academic institution, but also in collaboration with DARPA. So it's a military project to begin with. So that should give you thought, but it's also like the same LSD experiments that the CIA started. And they didn't know what the answers to those would be. And they probably found that, hey, this makes people more loving, compassionate people searching for a higher truth. They're like, crap. I know for myself, the internet's been a really important force,
amen,
right? For all of us to bring us together during COVID. So I think they unleashed the beast. They saw where they needed to tighten in. And we're at that stage now where they're consolidating data. So I wanted to understand how exactly the surveillance works. And I looked at phones and I looked at laptops. And I want to preface this by saying that they're not as sophisticated as we make them out to be. They're actually really lazy. And the majority of the surveillance comes through our consent from using these pre-packaged devices. I've been calling them pre-hacked. They're literally pre-hacked, dude. Like, if they could install an app without your knowledge or prevent you from installing an app or force update your phone's already been hacked, right? So people everywhere are using these devices. And the good news is there are solutions. So I looked at three different layers of mobile privacy. There's of course the operating system, which 99% of phones are tied to Google and Apple. There's also the apps, and then there's telecom itself. And what has happened at each stage has been these centralized services on our phones, which are responsible for, if you use Uber or Airbnb, that's how they can detect how close you are, right? Within 20 feet, they know your location. That's because they've collected every Wi-Fi network in the world. So there was a study that they did in Maryland where they mapped out, like, an Apple had left it completely open So you could actually collect all the Wi-Fi points they knew. Researchers collected 2 billion points.
Wow.
So it was a map of the world, literally just a section of the Amazon rainforest was, because there's no Wi-Fi there, right? That's what they didn't have access to. They were also able to see Gaza being destroyed in real time from the Israeli Defense Forces. They were seeing the Wi-Fi networks disappear on the map. So, you know, this is kind of the visibility you can have with these things you don't think about. And Google and Apple, behind the scenes, you know, they're given all these passes. They're given these small fines relative to the damage they do to people's privacy and how they lie to people, because they're very, very useful for these government agencies. So it happens by consent. It's mainly through these big tech companies. And once we start opting out of their operating systems, start using open source apps, we will make an impact. In fact, they're already very scared of that. Google is starting to make changes to normal big tech phones, saying that, hey, we're not going to let you install an app unless the developer gave us his identification or his or her identification, and we have the signing keys, meaning that we can control it, right?
And do they sort of frame that as, we want to protect you, so we don't want some rogue actor who's anonymous to create something that then has backend info to your data or something like that, when in reality it's an inversion in most cases?
Totally, man. It's the same. It's the same.
Because they do. That's literally what they do.
It's doublespeak. Yeah. You're spot on. And it was a really lame excuse. And you know they're slipping up when they don't have time to do these well. But Google was like, we did an analysis of apps out on the internet. Because, you know, Google, you're allowed to go and get an app off the internet and install it on a Google Android phone. On Apple, you're not. We're allowed to do that already.
Right.
So like, yeah, we took a sample of the apps out there on the internet, and there was more malware on there than the Google Play Store. That was it. There wasn't a study. They didn't publish anything. And it's like, where did you look? Did you go on a hacking forum? Because that's actually bullshit. Like, if you go on an open source store or catalog, those apps don't have any malware at all. So, you know, security through your safety. That's the reason they give us.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. It doesn't surprise me at all. Can we talk a little bit about, like, how much you mentioned that 99% of phones have either Apple or Google functionality behind them. Mm-hmm. Can we talk about how those two might be sort of under the same umbrella as well?
Totally. Yeah. We see them as these competing companies, right? They have these huge product ecosystems. They're worth billions of dollars, but they come together for the goodness, you know, for the goodness of the world. Thanks, like, during COVID, the contact tracing, which they tried really hard to everyone to do. So Google and Apple worked on that together. It's called Exposure Notification System. It used Bluetooth to try and tell how far apart people were. That's not even a good way to tell how far people, it doesn't actually work. There's been studies that show that, you know, Bluetooth reflects, it's not very accurate. The most concerning part, fine, Google and Apple can do that, but the worst part of it was they went to states and they got hundreds of millions of dollars to build these contact tracing apps for states. And this was part of the COVID stimulus package. They put a lot of money into this and no one even used it. People weren't using it. So at a certain point in time, Google was like, or the Massachusetts Department of Public Health was like, we need people to use this app. Otherwise, what's all this work we put in? And so Google forcibly installed it on a million people, at least a million people in Massachusetts.
Wow.
So one day people saw this app was updating. They're like, oh, Mass Notify, I didn't install this. Then they looked, their Bluetooth was on. It was already working. So they were able to do that remotely for people in Massachusetts, right? That's the level of control they have. And people need to realize these centralized services, just as the way they did with digital payments, the way they're doing with the wallets that are going to have our digital IDs. When these digital IDs start to become a thing and we have the universal apps too, it's these two companies that are going to roll it out. So you have to ask yourself, do you want to be attached to them or do you want to be on the other side of the wall?
The other big thing that you just mentioned too, though, is how they do it with our own consent. I think it goes without saying that most people do not read the terms and conditions of the devices that they purchase, nor the software that they download on said devices or are already inherent to said devices, or the apps that they download. Most people do not read the terms and conditions. Can you talk me through some of the more sketchy, let's say, things that are inside some of these terms and conditions that we're consenting to, unbeknownst to most of us, again, because we don't actually read them?
Yeah, I mean, it was in the beginning of Gmail when they offered it as a service there. I think they were the first ones to offer like a serious amount of storage. It was 2 gigabytes, which was big at the time. And part of that was we can read your emails to improve our service. So like there's a lot of businesses. I know this is a harsh reminder to some people, but if you are running a business on Google Sheets or their suite, everything is being read and they're learning from it, can be absorbed by AI. Microsoft's new terms of service for Windows 11, kind of the same thing. We saw that AI project with Cortana, which would take a screenshot every few seconds. Now they say that's on device, and it's not sending data back to their servers. The problem is they always have a way to sidestep around it. There are different services involved which are core to the operating system, can't be disabled, that are constantly tracking what you do. So a good example is like there's things that are logging on your phone that you wouldn't even expect it. Things like iTunes or iMessage or the Google Clock app or YouTube. Right? Our phones aren't just one single piece. There's all these services working together. They all have their own terms of service. It also makes it worse that they say they won't sell or share your data, but there are subsidiaries. It's kind of being within the same company, right? So they have all these shell companies and they can pass data down to them. So you're really making agreement with many different companies when you use these applications. I think another really interesting thing is the location aspect, and they're very interested in where you're moving, where you're going. So if you're using Google Maps on an iPhone, you're in this thing called Sensor Vault. Have you heard of Sensor Vault?
No.
Sensor Vault is this historical geolocation database that Google has, and it basically allowed law enforcement, they could see a map, they could draw a box around the area of interest, and they can see all the phones in that area. So any iPhone using Google Maps or any...
And there's no way to turn that off?
There's no way to turn that off. No.
That is so wild, dude.
Yeah, dude.
And law enforement has all that data. And within that box that they can draw of a specific area, right? Yeah. Does it automatically identify whose phone it is, or is it just a phone?
They say it's anonymized.
Yeah, I don't believe that at all.
The Android ID. Right?
I don't believe that whatsoever. No,
it's just trivial for them at that point to get the information they need, and that's typically how they work. But these warrants are called geofence warrants. Now, this New York Times ran the story, and Google was like, hey, all right, now the Google Maps history is just going to be on your device, as if that really changes anything. It doesn't change anything. They don't even have the guts to say Sensor Vault is wrong and say anything about Sensor Vault. They kind of just left that part alone. In my opinion, this database still exists. This type of geofence warrant is really, really popular. The apps on your phone, the games, everything you're doing, it's free because they're selling that data.
Yeah.
And so there's this whole industry behind it where when I used to make apps, it's the first email I got when I published. It's like, hey, include our software development kit. Hey, here's these analytics. We'll pay you $1 per this much of usage time. And it's all being packaged up. Data is being cleaned up and sold to companies. That way they can circumvent our constitutional rights. Now you don't need to get a warrant. It's all packaged up privately. So
that's
can be
wild.
Searched.
That is so wild, dude.
Yeah.
And I can see where people's gut reaction to that may be like, if they're just an upstanding individual who's in integrity, just be like, I don't really care if they have my information. And why in your mind is that a slippery slope to think along those lines?
Yeah. You know, in this fight for freedom of our minds, I think we need to care about why that data is so valuable to these companies. Why is it? There's a surveillance aspect, and you may be like, I don't have anything to hide. They can see me. They can see me in all my form. But it's also about giving this industry and this ecosystem, you're feeding it. The more you use their products, the bigger it gets. And that's why the network effect comes in. We only use Airbnb because everyone's on Airbnb. If there was a freedom-loving Airbnb, we'd probably use that. Mm-hmm. So it really becomes a spiritual choice of what you want to support. And so these big tech companies, even though they're losing money behind the scenes, they don't really care about people's privacy. They're just becoming too big. And it's just the whole Walmart situation happening again. These companies are going to get so big, they're going to crush anyone who's trying to propose an alternative. So it's a really important reason we need to support open source development. Another thing, too, I'd say on that front is this data is so valuable because it makes this extensive profile about who you are as a person. I was at this event last week and someone was saying, man, I think Twitter knows what pisses me off. And I mean, you know this, you've been covering the Kirk, you know, the Kirk stuff, and it's a shame that happened, but they're ready to take these talking points and harvest your loosh.
I literally just commented on that today on Facebook that the algorithms are deliberately feeding us information that A, confirms our own bias, and B, pisses us off related to the confirmation of our own bias and anything that opposes that bias.
Yeah, man. And it's true. They are, they would like to have civil war. They would really, they're dying for it. It's not in our human nature to want that. So no. They really have to use this ecosystem to try and engineer it. And that's just life on big tech. You know, I don't really, if I choose to open that door and look into it, I can, but that's my choice. It's not there in front of me. It's not integrated into my phone. There's no advertisements. So that's the real difference. It's really for peace of mind too.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I have a couple other questions related to sort of framing the issue, and then I want to get into above if that's okay.
Cool.
One of those is, so Palantir has sort of come onto the scene, and it's been in the works for quite some time. And from my understanding, Whitney Webb just revealed that Palantir originally was literally a government-funded project that, quote-unquote, broke off to become a private organization so that it could appear to be separate from the government that the government is just contracting with.
Yeah.
But we also know that a variety of government contractors, Raytheon, Lockheed Martin, Boeing, and a number of other ones that I could name, there's a revolving door between that when it comes to the military industrial complex, same when it comes to the pharmaceutical industry and the FDA and things like this. They're really one and the same. It's corporation, and really the government's also a corporation too. So it's just corporation with corporation at the end of the day. That being said, Palantir, how do you view that as someone who is a tech expert, so to speak, relating to all that we're discussing here?
It's the most important story of this year for sure. It's completely changing the paradigm. And I watched that video too from Whitney. She is definitely the best source of information on the history of Palantir. I chose to look into more like, what does Palantir look and function like? How can it be used by law enforcement? And it's troubling. It goes into what's, I'm calling it unified surveillance, because they created what they call an ontology, which is basically a standard for how you can feed data to this larger system. So think about any source of data, your dentist's office, the place where you park, parties you go to, you know, tickets that you buy, all can be adapted to fit within this big data system. And
literally profile every single aspect of your life, because what's happening, correct me if I'm wrong, is that the information that Palantir is pulling is your phone, your device that you have on you at all time, or a wearable that you have on you at all time, bouncing off of other wireless devices to profile literally every single waking moment of your life.
That is the intended goal, right? In total information awareness, or terrorist information awareness. And now they have an avenue to do this, because before this model, police departments and intelligence agencies, for that matter, would have to build their own systems. Like, for instance, Hemisphere, where it's a DEA program. They collabed with AT&T to collect everyone's call detail records. So phone calls and texts are not private. We can talk more about that. Mm. Now, Palantir is a system where every single thing is modeled. People, their cars, their houses. And so imagine this is already, the LAPD already uses this. I imagine a lot more police departments are using this. We know New Orleans is also using this. But imagine being able to say, hey, I'm investigating this case with this person, and you click on them. It's like, okay, here's who he hangs out with. This is his family. You click into one of those people. Hey, here's where he lives. Here's what car he drives. So it's total awareness of what people are doing. And then on top of this, they're building an AI model to see, hey, who's most likely to commit a crime?
See, that's the part that sketches me out the most. It's not even the first thing you said. It's that. It's the quote unquote predictive nature of Palantir, from my understanding, because that is such a crazy slippery slope, even aside from all the other pieces that are incredibly sketchy. Like, that is so scary, dude, because that means that we're setting the precedent, not we, but they're setting the precedent that they're profiling people based on certain characteristics and behaviors in order to say that, oh, the data shows that they will inevitably lead to this, this, and this if they think along these lines, which means that it could end up being from that perspective mm-hmm. that, oh, you're an anti-vaxxer. Well, here's what an anti-vaxxer becomes in its most extreme case. And that's someone who becomes a quote unquote domestic terrorist that shoots schools. And that's not true, but there's so much manipulation with psychotropic medications, with the CIA, with MK Ultra, to where they can sort of make those two completely distinct things sort of fit it into some sort of pattern in order to say people who think like this, we've got to nip that in the bud right now, because it's probably a bad example that I'm giving, but I think you get the lines that I'm thinking along there.
No, man, you're spot on with the pre-crime. That's the direction they want to go. They want to have any reason to put people behind bars. That's the ultimate case. And we're really in this race now. I think that we have about, I want to say 2 to 3 years. That's what I intuit. That's also what we see with digital ID. That's kind of their timeline. Hey, 2 years, it's going to become widely available. And it's going to be this process. Remember when like Apple Pay or Google Pay came out?
Yeah.
You probably knew it was a bad thing. I mean, maybe some of us use it, but it just matters if 80% of us opt into it. Same thing at the airports. So when this new digital ID system comes out, well, hey, here's the front end to that Palantir back end. And if we enroll in that, there's no way to come back out. I personally think here's the bright side of this. I don't think there is the manpower to go out. I think a lot of people have woken up now.
Yeah.
The list that you're on is way too long. We're all waking up, right?
Yeah.
So
we're on a list, but a lot of us are on a list. So it's all good at this point.
Are you on the list? Now it's a cool thing.
Yes, exactly. Yeah. Exactly.
Yeah. I think this is the natural way of things. I think it had to happen exactly like this, because without this fracturing, this digital wall of society, you wouldn't be pushed. You wouldn't be pushed onto the right side. We kind of need a little push.
100%, dude.
Push me onto the side that is less digital and less under their control. Push me onto the side where I can't go into like a Home Depot or Lowe's parking lot because they have those Flock license plate cameras. I'll happily go to the local hardware store and support them with my money. We're going to be kind of forced into our own area if we're watching out for those things. And I think that's a good thing.
Is that what those cameras are in the Home Depot and Lowe's parking lot? I never knew that.
They're big in Texas. Yes, yes, yes.
Oh my God, I did not know that.
Dude, I actually haven't seen them in person. I've wanted to go. What do they look like?
No, I've seen them. They're just like these, they look like just typical light that's in parking lots, you know, like really tall lights, but they're on a base that is a mobile base that kind of like a mobile generator type thing. That's what I've seen. I had no clue that's what they are.
Yeah, so those are in most Home Depots and Lowe's in the country. They're also at most police departments, a lot of them in Texas. It's very interesting how the more freedom-minded states like Texas and Florida get these things. You know, I wonder what the reason is behind that.
Right.
But so the Flock system, it's kind of running parallel to Palantir. So you could search in Flock. Hey, let me, here's a gray car with front-end damage, and it'll pull up everywhere a car like that has been spotted or parked.
Wow.
Yeah. So it's this kind of AI search.
God, dude.
You know, hey, we're using it. They're using it too.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
You mentioned that phone calls and texts are not private. Can you discuss that?
Sure.
As well.
Yeah. So cellular communications go through three major companies in the US. There's actually four, but AT&T, T-Mobile, Verizon. Now, the towers, too, they're all using AT&T routers within them. And so every phone call and every text we make, by law, it's called, the law is called Communications Assistance in Law Enforcement Act of 1994. And it just requires all cell providers to make that data open. So they encrypt it, but they encrypt it, right? So these
say that in a different way. What do you mean?
The telecom companies, it's encrypted over the air, but they're the ones encrypting it.
Got it. Okay.
So they do have access.
So they have backend access.
Exactly. To everything. All our calls and all of our text messages. And then usually there's a warrant process to go through, but that's also changed with this Hemisphere program that I mentioned, which is an old program. Have you ever seen a Better Call Saul?
Yes.
So remember when he's like, all right, he does a drug deal or whatever, he's doing a crime and he breaks his phone, throws it in the trash. It's basically designed to find the next phone that the next phone you'll use after you break a phone.
No way.
Yeah, like a burner phone thing. So that was really easy for them because they know which phone numbers this phone is communicated to and the probability of another phone communicating to those same phone numbers.
Wow.
So they have these really old programs, and it's just insane to me why we still use phone calls and texts when there's this level of visibility. Now, Hemisphere, they hid its existence, and it was collecting all the calls and texts from the entire country. And if there was used an investigation, they made a point to say, hey, if you do get a lead from Hemisphere, do not actually reference it in your case.
No way. That doesn't surprise me at all, because they want to make it seem like we have some level of privacy when we actually don't.
Exactly. And so, you know, the defendant might be wondering, how did they even get this data? Well, it could have started in a secret database, and they hit it with parallel subpoenaing. It's what they call it.
That is so wild, man.
Yeah.
The other thing with that, too, is even if you were to use a flip phone at this point, mm-hmm. the same would still apply. It's text messages and calls, period. It's not just related to smartphones.
Totally. Yeah. So a dumb phone doesn't really protect you from this. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It's just that smartphones, they have double surveillance because they can also read what's going on your screen forever.
Yes. And, you know, to a degree, dumb phones too. Probably it's not as sophisticated as smartphones. I haven't done an analysis. I should. But the important piece is, if you are going to communicate, there is a carve out in our laws. If that isn't, it doesn't really matter anymore, but there is a carve out saying all internet traffic can be encrypted, right? So that's why internet based communications are so important. And there's people who recommend Signal, which is a U.S. government project, right?
Is it really?
Yeah, man.
Okay. I've heard rumors about that. Can you talk about Signal and Telegram as well? Because I've seen conflicting ideas mm-hmm. on the level of privacy and surveillance and your data when it comes to those apps.
Yeah, let's talk about Signal first. So Signal was founded by Moxie Marlinspike, and there was another also pioneer of encryption. I'm forgetting his name right now, but they founded it together. And these people were working. They had Department of State contracts. So they were military contractors. But the meanwhile, they would go on tour and talk about how they were subverting rebels in Asia, or the FBI was trying to hack them. So it was really just a marketing ploy. And then Signal received its first round of funding from the Open Tech Fund, which is from the U.S. Department of Media. And that's it's kind of a branch of the CIA. So they were using the same organization to do things like Radio Free Asia to fight communism, right? They would set up pirate broadcasting stations. So this is kind of a continuation. It's like they saw that privacy was important. People were going to get behind it. So why not co-opt the movement and create these things? And then you have Snowden, right, who is also a government contractor, and he goes on tour exposing PRISM to the world, which was amazing public service if you believe everything in PRISM. But he also pointed people to two solutions, Signal and Tor. Tor is a U.S. Navy project, right? It also receives funding from the same arm.
So this is almost like, we could speculate all day, but this is almost seemingly an act of what is controlled opposition, possibly.
By design,
right?
To try and funnel your activities through it. And I urge people not to fall for it. There's better solutions. There have been better solutions for 20 years, but big tech saw that coming and subverted them. One thing I promote a lot is XMPP.
Okay.
And it's a solution that we have as part of our suite of software services, and anyone can run it. So Alec, it's really the great equalizer, just the way we should be trying to grow food or eat food that we can grow ourselves in organic methods. We should also have organic software. So XMPP, it's free, it's decentralized, it's a communications protocol. You can think of it like it could do anything WhatsApp can do. In fact, WhatsApp used to be built on it.
Really?
So it scaled to millions and millions of people, and then WhatsApp kind of changed. They shifted off of it. But it will still give you end-to-end encrypted messaging, calls, video calls, file sharing, so all those types of things. And it's free. Anyone can use it right now. If you go to, if you search XMPP providers, you can go to a server, you sign up, you get this thing that looks like an email, then you can call anyone who has XMPP.
Wow. That's epic.
Yeah.
Okay. Tell me about Telegram now, too. Sorry, I'm just trying to frame all the issues first, and then we'll get to all the solutions.
You're a big Telegram user, right?
I do, man. Yeah, I use Telegram. I wouldn't say the way forward is on Telegram, but I have a broadcast channel on Telegram. Yeah.
Me too. It was my first, it's kind of my first outlet. So I've got my following on there, and it's hard to remove yourself from it. Look, I will say
I feel that, like, I'm dancing in two worlds right now, and it's just most people, due to convenience, which I want to get to, choose the big tech social media apps. Like, that's just the reality.
I do want to talk about that more, the whole hippity hop on the border thing. So Telegram was founded by two brothers, Pavel Durov and his other brother, I'm forgetting his name, but he was kind of the genius tech guy who lives in a cave, a prodigy mathematician sort of thing. They rolled their own encryption protocol. And before they did Telegram, they did VKontakte, which was the biggest social network in Russia. And there was this whole thing about them in the Kremlin where they were asking for data. Putin was asking for data or asking them to censor. I forget which protest is about. People better than history would know. But to censor activity around the protest, they refused. Things happened. And Pavel got exiled out of the country as a result. So he's kind of got this freedom fighter-esque history. And I think that besides from being like, it's all proprietary. His back end is proprietary. So his front end app is open source, which is great and all. Same thing with Signal. The front end app is open source, but the servers it connects to, that's all hidden.
Got it.
You can't actually tell what's going on there.
And do they say that the reason for that is because they don't want that back end stuff to be hacked?
It's, I mean, yes, that's definitely part of the reason. The other part is that's your secret sauce, right? That's
I'm just saying what they say publicly. Obviously, like, they have their own reasons. Again, we can speculate.
Pavel doesn't talk about any important issues anymore like that. Like, there's a lot of things I don't like about it that now you can't sign up unless you're using the official Telegram APK. And then I really think he had good intentions, but he did resist to the point where they had to show him, hey, we're gonna find you if you end up in France, and they put him in jail. And now I think there's a lot more compliance from Telegram.
Yeah.
Also, we have to understand that most of Telegram's not truly end-to-end encrypted. All of Telegram's engineers can access it. I think compared to other messaging apps, it's probably a lot better, but that doorway is still open now. Yeah.
Yeah, and some of these points become moot or almost secondary to think about when you think about, again, that everyone's using an iPhone or an Android phone anyway. So, yeah, like, it doesn't even matter if Telegram is a little bit more freedom friendly, so to speak, if you're using these devices.
Reading your keyboard or whatever they're doing.
Exactly, yeah. Dude. Yeah, exactly. Okay, I want to talk about one more app.
Okay.
Because this is another, I don't even know how it is, given who is the owner of it at this point. But X, this is another app that people like tend to think is a freedom-oriented app. And I want to say this, which is really interesting. Before Elon Musk took over Twitter, I had been deplatformed from Twitter, and I was off the app for nearly a year. Prior to being deplatformed, though, when Jack Dorsey was in charge, my account, despite being roughly half the size that it is now, had far more engagement with pretty much the same general messaging. If anything, my messaging has gotten better. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And now that I'm back on X and he's reinstated me, that is the platform that, despite having 90,000 followers, I get by far the least engagement on, even less than Facebook, where I only have 15. And like, I don't give a shit about followers. That's not the point. But the point is, it's supposed to be the quote freedom oriented app. And I get way more engagement on Instagram, way more engagement on Facebook, where I have way less followers.
Mm-hmm.
And X, I get very little engagement relative to what I used to get prior to being deplatformed, which is really interesting. But there's a variety of other issues I know with X as well.
It's troubling because now X has, you know, become the town square. It's where a lot of the first stories are broken. There's a lot of engagement on it. I think that we need to stop giving stock to the views. I think that there's bot farms that are in operation. We've seen them in China and other places, but also they gave voice to the agenda that they want. So your posts, which I read, are very balanced and holistic, right? You're telling people to really reflect and not just jump to an emotional reaction. That's not what the algorithm wants, right? I don't think that Elon taking it over really did anything besides kind of close it off a little bit more. I think Twitter was already heading in that direction, but some of the things they've done is they've made sure you can't bring up competitors like Mastodon or other, you know, like Playrama or other social networks that are decentralized. But I would say X is definitely a testing ground. I am for psychological operations, and I do think it's really widely in use.
It's also that it was under the guise of being freedom oriented that is the issue, though. That's how it like sucked in so many people who think somewhat similarly to us, let's say.
What do you think about all the Anon accounts on X?
Dude, it is so sketchy to me. Yeah. Like, some of the biggest trolls I've ever come across in my life are on X. And I just wonder if they're using some sort of LLM and they're really just like AI bots that are really good at appearing as if they're legitimate human beings. And their whole purpose is to troll specific
waste
accounts.
Waste your time.
Yes, waste your time, man.
You're spot on, man. And I think that, I mean, you know, there's the dead internet theory, whereas half the internet is bots. I give stock to that because I've seen like several generations of spammers attack the Freedom Cell Network because kind of overseeing it all. It used to be really, really badly done. It used to be like people who I think were working at a call center like thing, typing to us in broken English and trying to scam our members. Then it just graduated. It got better and better and better. Now I think they're using sophisticated large language models and just, you know, they always have something to detract against you. We saw like a double post once, like the same type of comment twice from two different accounts, but it was almost same word for word. And it was casting doubt on the people's reset, like the event. It's like, why would I want to go to an event with a bunch of crazies or something like that?
Wow.
Same type of event, like a pretty few minutes after we were promoting it. So that's the type of things they do now, right? They'll try and drag you down in the mud with these bot accounts to shape public opinion. So, yeah, I mean, everything you're doing is so important, man. So
thank you, bro.
Yeah.
Likewise. I think you're doing, I would even say you're doing more important stuff than me, honestly.
Well, we need each other, right?
Yeah.
I mean, I don't know if you've thought about this. In this new counter economy we're building, there's a bunch of different things you could be. You could be a farmer, you could be a builder, you could be a technologist. How big of a space is there for content creators? And do you think it's the most important piece because they're bringing more people in?
Yeah. I mean, that's a really good point. Like helping others to refine their own beliefs, their own ideas, their own perspectives on reality. I think that is a really good point. I appreciate that, man. There's a recent poll that I put out on all my social media channels, and 95% of people responded that they're struggling to find their health and freedom community in person. And don't get me wrong, these platforms, these devices that you're listening to or watching this podcast on right now are great for helping to disseminate information, helping us, you know, find like-minded people to validate us, but they are not a replacement for real in-person community. At the core of our new community platform is a powerful, easy-to-use map helping you to instantly connect with like-hearted, like-minded community, including men and women, farms, schools, practitioners of all types, and other businesses near you. The platform also includes groups, social functions, messaging, and Platinum members also get access to our content library with footage from all of our in-person and virtual events like Confluence and the end of COVID, as well as breathwork sessions, Qigong sessions, member Q&As, and also member community calls. So if you'd like to support this podcast and support our mission of helping people to connect hyper-locally, in person, and also, obviously, support yourself in the process, go to the show notes or just go to thewayforward.com/join. And again, the way forward is spelled thewayfwrd.com/join. Become a member today. Help us build the way forward for mankind. Deep sleep or in-REM sleep is crucial for our body's daily rejuvenation, repair, and overall well-being. And unfortunately, most people fail to get enough of this essential phase of sleep. It's responsible for some pretty crucial functions, including daily rejuvenation and repair, regulating cravings, weight loss, hormone balance, boosting energy, and more. And if you're not getting enough deep sleep, you may struggle with some of the issues that I listed. There are several factors at play, including things like non-native EMF exposure, artificial light exposure, and circadian dysregulation. But another big reason for a lack of deep sleep is magnesium deficiency. Over 80% of the population is deficient in magnesium, and magnesium plays a crucial role in our sleep, one of which is increasing gamma-aminobutyric acid, or GABA, which encourages relaxation on a cellular level. Magnesium also plays a key role in regulating your body's stress response, and when you're deficient, you tend to have higher stress levels, which, as you can imagine, doesn't exactly help with sleep. Now, before you go out and buy a magnesium supplement, it's important to understand that most products out there only have 1 to 2 forms of magnesium, when the reality is your body needs all 7 forms of this essential sleep mineral. That's why I recommend Magnesium Breakthrough. Magnesium Breakthrough from Bioptimizers contains all 7 forms of magnesium designed to help calm your mind, help you fall asleep, stay asleep, and wake up feeling refreshed. The deep sleep benefits when you get all 7 forms of magnesium through Magnesium Breakthrough are really noticeable. And as I've shared before, I don't take a lot of supplements, nor do I promote a lot of supplements, but this is one supplement that my family is regularly using. And there's a reason that this is a best-selling product for Bioptimizers. For an exclusive offer, go to bioptimizers.com/Alec or just head to the show notes and use promo code ALEC10 during checkout to save 10%. And if you subscribe, not only will you get amazing discounts and free gifts, you will also make sure your monthly supply is guaranteed. Okay, I want to talk about a few things that you had mentioned you wanted to discuss. And one of them is big tech companies buying up energy projects. Can we talk about that a little bit as well?
Yeah, man, this is a really scary issue. It's a renewable energy product. I mean, we're already in an energy crisis here in the U.S. You might remember in Texas last winter, I don't know if Austin was affected by that, but do you guys have brownouts here?
Dude, so I want to say something real quick related to this, which is really interesting. So I'm not going to name who it is for his own. I mean, I don't know if he would care.
Protect his privacy, bro.
Yeah, I'm going to protect his privacy, so I'm not going to name who it is, but a friend of mine who I spend time with that does work for an energy company, that's what he does, and he's somewhat awake to what's going on in the world, but that's just what he does. So that's how he provides for his family.
Yep.
I have no judgment for him. He's a freaking good dude.
Yeah.
He said that sometime next year, in large parts of West Texas, they're going to have rolling blackouts because the grid can't keep up. He said it's going to happen. There's nothing that they can do about it at this point, which is really sketchy.
That is really sketchy. And I mean, like, it doesn't really surprise me. This last winter blast that Texas felt, they said, ERCOT said they were 3 minutes away from a total failure. And it would have taken weeks to get back online. So maybe they're kind of planning ahead. Hey, here's West Texas. I mean, there's not as many people there. But right, so we're already in this energy crisis and there's renewable energy projects happening. There's a lot of different things they're working on. They're working on just more natural gas plants. There's nuclear facilities being built. Google is investing in nuclear fusion reactors. And it's crazy that 50% of the investment in technologies like these are just from big tech companies.
What's up with 50%? That?
Data centers, dude.
Wow.
Yeah, so these data centers are getting built. They're huge facilities. You might know about Meta's data center. It's being planned in Louisiana. Forget the name of the region, but dude, it's so disgusting because they kind of pick the poorer areas of the states, and they exploit them because there's nothing going on there. So Meta's new data center is about as big as Manhattan. It's I want to say it's $1 billion.
One single building. No,
it's a series of buildings, but
it's still like a campus though.
Like a campus.
It's that big.
Exactly.
As big as Manhattan. What?
It's huge, man. And they're building 3 different power plants just for that. And people nearby are expected to foot the bill when the prices go up for their energy costs, because that data center is going to suck up everything. Switching subjects to X's data center in near Memphis, Tennessee. That thing is pulling directly from the aquifer, the Memphis aquifer. It has a direct line to the aquifer, and they're using this drinking water to cool AI cards.
That's insane.
It's insane, man. It's evil. And
that's polluting the water too, I'd imagine.
Yeah, I don't know if you can use the water after that.
That's insane, bro.
There's this, what is it called? It's called saveyouraquifer.org. They're doing some really good work on the ground in Memphis, and you know, they go and visit the site. It smells terrible. And of course they're polluting the aquifer. I didn't know this, but if they pollute too much of the aquifer, it actually breaks into the groundwater and then becomes more polluted if it reaches that point. And so this goes back to our phones. Actually, this is a good tie-in. That phone you're going to use is eventually going to be tied into AI, which is being trained at these data centers, and your profile will likely be stored at these data centers. They need that to store all of our digital data. So it's a, you don't think about it, but there's all these choices that happen behind the scenes because billions of us are choosing to use this stuff.
That's the thing, man, is it comes back to our own individual choices at the end of the day. It's so easy for us when it comes to really anything that impacts everyone to be like, oh, well, I'm just one person. What's the big deal if I do this or don't do this? But everyone is thinking along the exact same lines. Nothing changes. And this is, I think, a good segue, honestly, to talk about convenience, dude, because, and I want to touch on dancing in both worlds from the perspective of a creator like myself, who is trying to reach a larger audience that is inevitably on these devices and on these big tech apps, dude. Yeah. It's such a crazy thing. I've said a number of times, like, man, this is back when I thought Telegram was truly free, like freedom oriented. Like, oh, I'm just going to move on to Telegram. And I've tried that for periods of time. And I realized, like, man, everyone's on Instagram. I'm just going to go back to Instagram.
Sorry, go ahead. I support you in that.
Okay.
I actually support you in that. I think we do need people pushing the message. It's like, but it has to be very purposeful.
Yeah.
And I mean, unfortunately, I don't have a good answer yet of what the next social network is. There's things like, there's like Mastodon, which has its own problems. Mastodon, it's a lot like Twitter. You make short posts. Anyone can run their own server. But it's used by techie people. It's used by people who are leftist. Not a bad thing in its own right, but they also, they're not as freedom-minded as we would like.
I think that what a lot of the tech people, not all, but a lot of the, you do a good job. A lot of tech people struggle to put themselves in the minds of someone who is technologically retarded, let's say, because these apps, relatively speaking, are so incredibly user-friendly. That's the thing, is they're so user-friendly that anyone, no matter the age, can learn it in just a few minutes.
Monkey can do it.
A monkey can freaking, literally.
And then he gets addicted.
Yeah, and he gets addicted, exactly, literally. So that's my point, is that, and at the same time, speaking along those lines, it's almost like we as human beings need to decondition ourselves from something that is so convenient and easy to use, because what is that doing to our psyche, to our resilience, to our dopamine, to our hormones in general, to our health? Like, there are a number of things that we're not considering in that when we make a statement, even that I just made myself.
Yeah.
Oh, these are so convenient and easy to use. So these other people who are making alternative versions need to put them. Do they actually though? Do they actually need to put themselves in the mind? Yes, there's probably some level, like, you want it to be user-friendly, but it's also, there's a line between user-friendly and addicting to where it's debilitating several aspects of who we are.
Yeah, no, you're spot on, man. I think I try to stay in the middle of the road. Like, it's the same thing with health. It's the same thing with tech. These industries scale to millions of people because they're doing things that work. I'm not going to ignore emergency medicine, you know?
Right.
There's parts of the allopathic complex, which which are emergency, a good thing.
Emergency and acute care, absolutely.
Let's do it.
Absolutely.
And same thing with big tech, what the user interface and interaction design that they've figured out works. It should be really easy for people. Hey, we're not going to have a growth to it if it's not easy to use. And the challenge is, right now, we're kind of in those awkward teenage years of the open source movement. Mm-hmm. It's like things are smoother than they've ever been before. So just here's a shout out to anyone who's looking to do a de-Googled phone. Look at the operating systems Graphene OS and Lineage OS, which Graphene OS we sell as an above phone. So I'll talk more about that. But these are now available. They've got the same look and feel as Android. You can run Instagram on them as well. So, you know, you can have your cake and eat it too. And what's best about it is you can actually, on Graphene OS, you can separate it and put it in its own box, separate from your main phone. So all of your junk food apps can just live in there. They're not on all the time. And you actually have to purposefully switch over into that phone.
Wow.
It's completely isolated. It's great for your psyche, and it's also better for your privacy. So there's different solutions we can use to still be in both worlds.
Wow, that's epic. Okay. And then just generally speaking on our tendency to choose what's convenient over what's right. that we know deep down. What are your thoughts on that? I'm sure you've thought about this a lot.
It's a struggle. And I think what it's saying is, so what I've learned from studying big tech is they have billions of dollars, but actually the engineers at those companies aren't doing a lot. And I'll reference this WhatsApp lawsuit that just happened last week. Head of security for WhatsApp suing Meta for retaliation because he was trying to improve their privacy and security. And they did the same political game. They ignored him. Then eventually he said, hey, we're breaking an FTC order. We previously have been fined $5 billion for it. And that's when things got real and they started micromanaging him and all this stuff. But he basically discovered the engineers in WhatsApp, they're not even building things. They're copying features from different apps and they're breaking things and fixing them again thousands of times a year just to hit their metrics, right?
Wow.
So they're being so careless with all their money and all their resources and all their talent, whereas it's really calling on us to step up and be better. So if there are technologists watching this, I do think there's a big market for you to come in. There's a lot of apps we need to build, right? There's all these things we need to build. We need to build a freedom Airbnb. We need to build decentralized marketplaces. The next few years are the right time to build them. And I think that we should make it as convenient as possible. With the above phone, we have made it convenient as possible. Normally, when you set up a de-Googled phone, you know, you spend a little bit of time getting installed. You have to figure out all the apps you're going to use. You have to figure out the right way to use it. It's a bit of a learning curve. So we wanted to make it into a product that's already ready to use. Hey, here's how you can watch YouTube privately and download the videos to your phone. Hey, here's a mapping app where you can download the entire country and navigate offline. You can just start doing these things right away. And so we've tried to make it easy for people. And I do think developers are learning now. They're learning about the convenient aspects. A lot of what iMessage can do, you can also do on above phone. We're talking about this before. But if it's just text messages or messages like XMPP, that works on any device. So you could text people and have it show up on your computer, reply there, and reply on your phone too. There's things you can do for like file syncing between your devices as well. So you save a file in the right folder, it shows up on your laptop too. So the technology is out there. It is up to the community, the tech community, and myself and others to make it easier for people. I totally get it. Not everyone's a tech head. I think we have done everything in our power at this point to make open source software easy to use. So yeah, I mean, I really would like you to check it out. I know you're thinking about making more of your devices private too.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. I want to touch on one more topic that you mentioned you want to bring up, and that's student surveillance at school. And then after this, I promise everyone listening, watching, will go on to
we'll have the solutions.
The solutions to all this, there's always a remedy. That's what I've learned with researching alternative laws, that there's always a remedy. There's always a solution. And we were talking off camera, and I want to make this point again. When it comes to these big tech companies, when it comes to any of these quote unquote nefarious actors, the reality is they're all just men and women as well. Like we tend to have this, we have this tendency, for example, I do it too, where like, you know, I look at someone like Bill Gates or any other nefarious actor, right? First off, at some level, they're a gift because what they've done is act as the catalyst for us to deepen our own self-exploration. So for that, I'm very grateful to deepen our own authenticity, to refine what we really think, refine our values, refine what's important to us, right? Really have us reflect on those things. And at the same time, I want to say, they are just men and women. Sure, you can make the argument that they're like secretly lizard people or something like
robots,
this, whatever.
Yeah,
robots, I don't know. But the point is, they're just men and women. We are also just men and women. And this thing, pointing to my body for those listening, is the greatest technology that has ever existed. I firmly believe that. And I always say this, when it comes to this technology, now I'm holding an iPad, love narrating for the listeners, was made in our image. We are made in the image of the omniscient, omnipotent, omnibenevolent, all the omnis creator. So we have the superior technology innate to us. So what can this technology do? All the things that these people are creating that we deem to be bad for human health, for freedom, they're just people that are creating them. What can we do? What can we create? And we'll get to that after we talk about one more sketchy thing that they've created with respect to surveillance.
There's a reason for it. It's important.
Yeah.
It's because the kids are defenseless. The kids are defenseless, and there's a whole generation of kids that are living in Gestapo, going through a Gestapo school system that is surveilling them at school and at home and follows them home.
We're talking about like public school in the United States?
All public school in the United States.
Whoa.
So it's these one kid, one device programs. So, I mean, if you're, you know, if you have a kid at school, if you're listening, they have a Chromebook or they have something like it. This is a new program that got started during COVID. The first state was Maine that did this, and they spent a lot of money so everyone could have a Chromebook. And he was inspired by talking with this, I'm blanking on his name, but he ran this one device per child program, and he was excited about getting laptops into third world countries to accelerate learning. But his project was picked up by the UN Special Projects. He's also spoken at the WEF. So he's also got ties to MIT. I mean, he's from MIT Open Media Lab, which was funded by Jeffrey Epstein. One thing you begin to realize at the top, it's a really small crew. If you wanted to sit down and learn it a few months, you could know the, you know.
Derek's done a good series on that, The Pyramid of Power.
Pyramid of Power. Everyone should definitely watch that. Yeah. And so this agenda with all these tech and schools is most definitely, it's foreign. It's for the purpose of conditioning kids to surveillance. Now kids are growing up, they're being given iPads, you know, really young ages, and they go into school where they don't even talk to their teachers. The curriculum is all online. So I did some research. Schools received $180 billion during the, it's called ESSER, which is a pandemic relief fund for students. And the government was like, all right, oh no, we're not going to be in schools anymore. Do everything in your power to catch them up. So what happened? This educational technology industry opened up overnight. And there's things for student safety. There's things for classroom learning. But to give you an example of what a kid goes through nowadays or in class, the teacher will be able to see everyone's screen in front of them. You can see what you're doing at any time. It can lock you in to a few websites that you're visiting. They can close the tab you're currently visiting. So they have, it's like the panopticon, right? You don't know whether they're watching or not. Now, that's just in the classroom. These technologies, the kids are using these laptops at home too. And there are different companies. There are different companies that are performing analysis of what the kids are doing on social media. And they're actually labeling them. So for instance, if someone is saying, like, there's this word that I was hearing. I interviewed a few kids that were concerned about this. And so they say things like KYS, which is kill yourself, which is terrible. We shouldn't say that. But they say that and they will get labeled in the system as potentially suicidal.
Wow.
Or gay or whatever, you know, whatever category they right. want. And teachers have access to that. These companies have access to that. It's just really, really scary. Mm-hmm. And so I'm trying to uncover all the different companies involved. I'm working on a series for Take Back Our Tech. And what I was inspired by is there was a group of kids. They're now in college and other places, but actually they figured out a way to hack their Chromebooks so they can install whatever they want on them.
Wow.
So I think if that's one takeaway. If you have a kid who's in school, go to your school and say, hey, can he bring a computer from home? And maybe you can get them to use a Linux laptop or something open source that's not totally connected to this thing all the time, which is spying on people.
Wow.
The scary part is like, you know, you kind of mentioned the convenience aspect. And if it keeps on getting convenient and convenient, you forget to open the hood of the car. These kids will have no idea how any of this stuff works. I think we need more technologists. This is dumbing kids down. And there's a generation of kids who will not know a life before surveillance. That's the scary part.
That's so sketchy to think about. Yeah. That's, oh man.
Yeah. I'm sorry to bring it down to that dark
portion. No, but that is true. Like that is true for a lot of people, but it doesn't have to be true for everyone. That's the cool thing.
That's right. And so if you have a Chromebook at home, there's this organization called Mercury Workshop, which has created a guide to jailbreak your Chromebook and install something on it. There's a number of different pieces of information. I'm working on a guide that streamlines everything. And I mean, we spent billions of dollars on these Chromebook devices. So they're out there in the wild. My thought is, let's just recycle their weapons into tools.
Have you figured out anything for Apple devices yet?
Yeah, now they keep them very, very locked down. Like the Macs before the M1 chips, you were able to install different operating systems on them.
Yeah.
That was like before 2016 or 18. I know, man. I wish I had something for you.
That's okay. That's okay. I just need to like suck it up and stop sitting with convenience and adopt like the alternative systems.
Leave a comment in the chat if you want Alec to go open source. show me some support. Is that how this is this a live stream? I don't know.
I wish it was. That'd be cool. Okay, let's talk about Above now. Let's start with, you already touched on it a little bit, but I want to get a little bit deeper on the development of Above. What did it start with first? Was it the phone?
It was a phone.
Okay.
Yeah. It was a phone. I mean, we were a group of volunteers, professionals actually, and it was kind of our day job, or it was kind of our side gig at the time. We were helping out the People's Reset. We were helping out Freedom Cells, and we needed a secure way to talk with each other and just work together. So it was a period of about 6 months where I went deep into researching what the best tools are. I found XMPP, the messaging. I found Jitsi for video conferencing. These are all really important alternatives. And then I started to make the changes to these communities to take them as private as possible. And then throughout that process, we ended up, you know, a few of the team had phones, and it was like, hey, this works pretty well. Can we offer this to more people? And then we went down that route of figuring out what people need most importantly on their phone, and can open source solve that for them. And we found that within the past few years, like during the start of the pandemic, things had gotten to a really good point. Actually, these de-Googled phones or alternative phones have more features than Apple or Google's phones.
Wow.
Yeah, when it comes to your privacy and your security, I'll give you a few examples of this. Like one, they can't be broken into. There's this company called Cellebrite. They're an Israeli company. They released a list of all the phones they can do FDE, full data extraction from. So you're probably hearing about this now. If you go into a certain country, they'll be like, can I see your phone? They might take it in the back room. Just take all of the data off it all at
no
once.
No shit. That's what they do.
Cellebrite. Yeah.
That's insane, dude.
It's gross, man. And so they release a list of all the phones they can do this to. Not Graphene OS. Graphene OS is not on the list. They would love to put it on that list, but there's a lot of lower level protections that these phones have and are using that Google and Apple, it's not a priority for them. So you get security at the lowest levels from hands-on attacks. You also get a runtime level security. So when you're using the phone, it's very strict about only giving access to apps that have, or apps or processes that have permission to that memory. So memory isn't left out in the open. It's constantly being cleared and deleted. So, you know, if there are people out there that are listening that are doing crucial stuff like running their business, or they have their documents on their phone, or they're doing crypto, this is the way to go. You improve your security. Then on the privacy aspect, you have all these awesome solutions, like you can control which contacts your apps have access to. Normally, you know, you sign up for WhatsApp or even Signal, you say, can I have access to your contacts? You just gave them like 3,000 contacts, everyone. And that's a fingerprint for you, the people you're in touch with, right? So with this phone, you can start limiting that.
Got it.
I only want to talk to these three people, so that's who I'm going to share it with. Same thing for storage. Hey, I only want to give you access to this folder on the phone. So there's all these really cool features that you can't get on a normal phone, nor they would want you to.
Wow. Can you share some of the alternatives that you can find? You mentioned it a little bit, like an alternative to YouTube, an alternative to some of these other apps, alternative to all the Microsoft full suite of like PowerPoint, Excel, et cetera, et cetera.
Great questions. Yeah. So I'll say that we have a phone, we have a laptop. It's Above Phone, Above Book, and Above Suite, which is our software services.
You have a tablet too, right?
We have a tablet too. That one is using the same software that Above Phone runs. So
okay.
It does everything. We got a tablet for you too, Alec.
What do you call it? What's Above? Is it Above Tablet?
It's Above Tablet.
Above
Tablet.
Okay, cool.
Yeah.
So those are the three devices you have right now: phone, tablet, computer.
That's right.
Cool.
And so you asked, like, what are some popular alternatives? So like for small meetings, I already am recommending this. So people use Zoom, you know, the terms of service there, they do scan it with AI. I believe there's a clause that says, hey, we get access to your likeness. So
what does that even mean, dude?
I think it means they could recreate you if they wanted to.
No, that's so sketchy.
Yeah, it's pretty
access to your likeness. Like what?
Yeah,
I mean so many different things. Yeah,
it's weird. I need to go back and reread. Someone can fact check me on that. I'm open to being wrong on that. But you can use Jitsi, which is an open source video conferencing tool. Anyone can set it up themselves. You can set up a server. We run a professional server where it's very, very reliable. We don't log. So with all the services that we run like 6 or 7 services. We don't log. And it's beautiful because you can just kind of hop in and you get a link and you're in this video conference and you could send that link to anyone by text message or by any message and they can just hop in, right? So it's the same thing you're used to. You can share screens. You can even have breakout groups and things like that. And this is what we need to start using instead of phone calls.
How many people can be on it at once?
We've maxed out at 40 on our server.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay, cool. I wonder if there'd be another one that needs to be developed for like larger like webinars and stuff like that. That'd be cool too.
Yeah, there's some third-party services I can connect you to, which I think are generally better than Zoom. So you asked about YouTube too. So unfortunately, there's not a complete replacement to YouTube, but you can definitely replace the app piece, which has a bunch of tracking in there. It's got the content algorithms that measure how long you watch videos to kind of see how interested you are in it. It's called NewPipe. That's the open source version. And it's really cool because it lets you watch YouTube without ads. You don't get any ads at all. You can even download the video or audio directly to your phone.
Wow.
It's cool.
It's so NewPipe. NewPipe?
Yeah, NewPipe. Exactly like that. Yeah.
Got it. Can you explain to me, as if I'm a 5-year-old, how your phone, how the above phone works with respect to AT&T, Verizon, and T-Mobile? Are those the three big ones?
Yeah.
Okay. How it works in relation to those? Because is it still having to use their systems in some way?
Yes. So I'll say that.
But you also have an internet version, right?
There's an internet. Yeah, we have a data SIM.
Okay.
So I'll start by saying there's many ways to connect to the internet, right? We all have a cellular connection in our phone that happens to that little SIM card that you put in. That'll get you connected to the tower. So that's one way. The phones that we sell are unlocked, so you can use those three carriers, but you could also use it anywhere in the world. Any carrier in the world, it's the same rules that all cellular carriers follow. That's why I think it's such a great solution. And so you can put in a SIM card and be connected anywhere you are at. You can also use the eSIM, right? Which I'm sure you know about, which is the digital version of that. You don't need to manage a car. So those are two ways you can connect the internet. But because this is an internet first solution and the messaging is internet focused, the video conferencing, all that kind of stuff, you can also just not put a SIM card in there and connect to Wi-Fi. There's a lot of our audience too that is EMF sensitive or conscious. And so we were one of the first to popularize doing the phones by Ethernet.
Got it.
And plug in an Ethernet wire and have that in your phone. And then you can make a call with zero radiation, which I think is super, super cool. I know you had Nico on recently and he was talking about biogeometry. I'm talking with the biogeometry family too to do some remediations for our phones and our laptops. So big collab coming.
To integrate that technology in it.
Yes.
Wow.
Yes. Into the phone. That's just what we need to do at this point. And, so there's a lot of things that you can do, but to answer your question, yeah. So you could do Wi-Fi, Ethernet, or cellular. Cellular will be the one where you can use like the native phone call and text messaging. We also run an internet phone service. So this is not using cellular, but it's going over the internet.
Got it.
So with that one, you can connect to Wi-Fi and still do international text messages. You can do international calls. It's $5 a month. And
it's nothing,
dude. It's nothing. It's cheaper and it improves your privacy because it doesn't connect to the nearest radio tower. It actually goes, it goes over the internet and initiates at one point.
Aren't there people that are developing some form of communication that uses Bluetooth and or Wi-Fi?
Jack Dorsey's new thing, right?
Yeah.
BitChat. Yeah. So there are now mesh networking is becoming popular and I think we're soon going to be at the point where it's accessible to more people.
That's both scary and cool because it's scary because it's just showing how many overlapping fields we're existing within at all times at this point. Unless, again, you're in like the Amazon rainforest or some remote place in the United States. Right. Thank God those places still exist. Canada, there's a lot of remote places. Point being, like, we're getting to the point where there's just so much overlapping fields that this is available. And it's also cool that that presents the opportunity to create decentralized solutions to use, quote unquote, their technology for our own benefit.
We know that, you know, electromagnetic communications, radio communications changed the world. We could communicate to the moon and back. You know, we could communicate to Mars and back. It's really the underlying, stuff that the universe is made out of. And I think that there is a right and wrong way to use it. And I'll pose a question for you. Do you feel like our bodies have adapted a little bit?
Man, this is a good question. So I would say yes. Like, all indications point towards we have adapted. I want to say yes with an asterisk, because I also don't know that what we're told about human history and our ancestors is entirely true with respect to the mainstream narrative on it, meaning that we're now living longer and better lives than our ancestors. I don't know that that's actually true. And I would actually tend to think that it's the opposite. And that being said, I believe that, again, this is the best technology that has ever existed, that will ever exist. And it is self-healing, self-regenerating. It is resilient. It is adaptable.
Yes.
Now,
we just forgot the manual. We don't have the user manual.
Exactly.
Exactly.
Exactly. So do I think that the EMFs that we're surrounding ourselves with have detrimental effects to our health? Absolutely, I do. Yes. And at the same time, I think that the human body is incredibly resilient and adaptable. And if you read Arthur Furstenberg's book, Invisible Rainbow, he indicates that the various quote unquote, I use a quote unquote so many times on the show, the air quotes pandemics that have happened throughout history or epidemics correlate pretty strongly with an increased electromagnetic activity across the earth.
Yep.
And what seems to happen after a lot of people become sick relative to that is that people have then adapted to a new baseline. I'm not saying that's bad or good. I'm just saying that's what is. And it just points to me towards the inherent resiliency of the human body. Now, with that being said, I'm not advocating for, like, let's go beyond millimeter wave technology. You know what I mean? I'm not advocating for that.
Yeah.
But I do think that we have a level of resiliency that's inherent to us.
Whatever weapon they have, they can throw it at us. We can take it. We'll adapt.
Yep.
And we are going to build clean systems for ourselves. And what brought this up? So the electromagnetic aspect is really, really important. We're talking about mesh networks. Now, we can utilize these in a more healthy way. I mean, I'm just theorizing here, right? But the same way Dr. Kareem with Biogeometry, he helped that village in Switzerland. I've been thinking about this recently. I might ask them about it. What if we could just create a kit that we could take to your nearest base station or cell tower and someone plant it down? That's not illegal to do that, right? And I do think very conscious people who are building communities will need to think like this. There is a lot of technology that can be used for good to help us, even though these things were designed without the care or maybe with intentional malice against us.
Yep.
It's up to us to fix all of it. And so these mesh networks, I've got some friends in the UK. They built their own radio from scratch. Potential of farthest reach is 60 miles, which is pretty exciting. I would love to build a mesh network that connects a city. I'm getting 5 radios here pretty shortly. Actually, they should be in the mail now. And
so you're just going to create like different nodal points with these towers for an alternative form of radio communication, essentially.
Exactly. Yeah. And so it uses Reticulum, which is a mesh networking protocol, which will. So these radios have enough throughput to do bi-directional voice.
Got it.
So you could be on like a phone call, right?
That's epic. That's cool.
So we could sit down, we could build these networks. There's a lot of cool things we could do with technology. We've thought about like drone towers. This is what these guys at BChat were telling me about. Like a drone that is basically sitting up in the air and holding, you know, one of these radios. You do need line of sight. So it's interesting. We're going to have to build our own towers and navigate that. But I do think that's what needs to happen. I think we have several years before any large scale thing happens to the internet, and this is the time to build.
Epic, man. Most healthcare today operates on an outdated mechanistic model, treating the body like a battlefield rather than a self-healing system. You wait months for an appointment only to receive a rushed diagnosis that labels you rather than truly understanding your unique health. Even in holistic health, many practitioners rely on endless lab tests and supplement protocols, addressing symptoms instead of the root cause. And the result? Another prescription or supplement regimen that merely suppresses or masks symptoms rather than facilitating true healing, whether the imbalance was physical, emotional, energetic, or a mix of all three. And that's why Dr. Tom Cowan co-founded the New Biology Clinic, to offer something radically different. As one of the most respected natural health doctors in the world, Dr. Cowan has spent decades challenging conventional medicine and advancing a deeper understanding of human biology, water, and natural health. His work isn't just about rejecting the mainstream. It's about offering a more truthful, biologically coherent approach for healing. The New Biology Clinic recognizes that health isn't about fighting disease, it's about restoring balance. You're not a diagnosis, you're an individual with a unique story, and healing should honor that. With virtual consultations available worldwide, the clinic offers a flat rate monthly membership that gives you direct access to practitioners who take the time to actually listen. Members also get exclusive health live streams, a resource library, and live sessions covering everything from biofield tuning and breathwork to movement and meditation, all designed to support whole body healing. And if you're not ready for a membership, you can book a one-time appointment, sign up for an enrichment-only membership for the healing modalities alone, or schedule a free connection session with one of the care team members to see how the New Biology Clinic can help in your specific situation. This isn't about keeping you dependent on doctors. It's about making you sovereign over your health. Head to newbiologyclinic.com and use code THEWAYFORWARD, and that's spelled the way, F-O-R-W-A-R-D, for $50 off account activation, or just head to the show notes for more info. If you're a member of The Way Forward, email hello@thewayforward.com for $150 off. Your body already knows how to heal, and New Biology Clinic helps you remember. Hey y'all, I'm here with Melissa Kupsch from Remedy Academy of Homeopathy. We are so stoked here at The Way Forward to be partnering with Melissa and Remedy in order to spread the message of homeopathy across the world, and also to partner on the eventual development of healing centers across the United States.
People are pretty quickly coming to realize that frequency is the future of medicine. We are witnessing the great resurgence of homeopathy right now. We're really moving away from that suppressive medical model. Whether it's for eczema, asthma, hormones, fertility, anxiety, depression, trauma, whatever it is, it all starts as energy in the person's field first. If we change our field, we can completely change our life. Our two-year academy is open worldwide to anyone who wants to become a homeopath. We've got 5 lecturers and we currently have over 500 students enrolled, which is record numbers in our field. A career in homeopathy is amazing for anyone who wants flexibility in their work and who wants to be valuable in creating this new world. We have stay-at-home parents enrolled, we have ex-medical professionals, grandparents signed up who want to learn how to heal their grandchildren and pass on that invaluable knowledge. We even have husband and wife teams. So my husband enrolled in the course with no prior knowledge of health as a background, and he is loving it.
Kylie is also enrolled as well, so my partner is, and she's so stoked to become a homeopath and to be helping to spread this message across the world.
The thing that we hear from so many of our students is, I found my thing. Homeopathy is the key. We harness frequencies from nature and we alter the field of all creations. So if anybody wants to join us or they want to know more about it, they can visit our website.
Yeah, and all that information will be in the show notes. So if you want to learn more about Remedy Academy, also Remedy Collective, also some of the homeopathic products that they have, please just head to the show notes. All of that will be listed there. Can you share a little bit about, I know we got into the phone and then some brief things that are included on the above book and above tablet, but can we go more in depth on those as well?
Sure. Yeah. You mentioned earlier, what's the alternative to Microsoft Office and all those kinds of things. So on the above book, we have this software called OnlyOffice, and it basically uses the same format as the Microsoft document. It even looks exactly the same, but it's open source software. There's no subscription you pay. AI is not scraping it. So you can actually interface with people who are on the big tech ecosystem. Like I do all of my work, spreadsheets, presentations through this. So yeah, anyone watching at home, look it up. OnlyOffice, it's a pretty good tool. There's also LibreOffice, which is not, it's not as sophisticated because it doesn't use the Microsoft Office format. It uses its own.
Got it.
But you can still do, get your work done on these open source solutions. So the above book, it's very similar to the phone. Everything you can do on the phone, you can do on the computer. The video conferencing, the encrypted messaging. You can send text messages from your computer. So it's got that iMessage type deal feel. And we also have a VPN that we run that runs on the phone and on the laptop. So we're trying to build this ecosystem of tools that people can use to get off the grid. And there's a lot of really cool solutions too. If you have like any specifics, I can point you to them. But our above book, we developed this last year. And the challenge was I told my engineers to, hey, let's make it so you don't have to hack in the terminal to use this thing. And I was like, okay, like, let's try to do that. We took the most...
This comes out of the box, essentially, is what you're saying.
Exactly, right? And if you want to do some things like update or install a program, it's point and click. There's a program you run to update. It updates the entire computer.
You guys also do a really good onboarding call with it, though. I went through the onboarding call, and it's really good with a above
with,
book.
With Lucas, right?
Yeah.
Yes. Yes. No, thanks for saying that. Yeah, like, support and education is the biggest part of this.
Yeah.
So like every device you get, you get a free kickstart call. That's what we call it. They run 45 minutes to an hour. We just help you migrate your data, take all your contacts, your files and photos, the apps you use, and let's show you how it works on the above product. So yeah. I'd say it's most of our company is supporting people and making
you
sure
you do a good job with that, man.
Thank
really
you,
good
bro.
Job.
Appreciate
and
that.
Can you reiterate one more time just to emphasize, like, given the context of all the stuff that we shared at the beginning of this episode, why Above and its full suite of products is the antithesis to that, is the solution, is the antidote mm-hmm. to that, rather.
Yeah. So companies like Above, I mean, we don't want to be the only player in the game. And there's other companies that are coming out, and I support and celebrate that because it's going to take thousands of competing companies to compete against big tech, big ag, big pharma. Right now is the time. I feel like entrepreneurship is the path to freedom. I think that I care deeply about these products. Like, I basically don't have a life because we're stewarding all these software services and we're making sure they're running fine. And on the back end, it's work, but it's work that I've been called on to do. That's how I can serve. And it's the antithesis because it's an equalizing, it's a company that equalizes all of our services. So any service we're running, whether it's Jitsi, XMPP, our file sharing app, which we released as open source, anyone can run this at home. I would say with a few weeks of training, you should be able to run your first service. I would really love to do a course that just, you know, from my journey from starting this 5 or 6 years ago to now, everything I've learned, I would love to do that and to teach others. That's what we're going to need. And that's why we're different, is because everything we're doing, you can do as well. Should be the same thing with farming. I think that there are a lot of successful people in the freedom-loving space. And it's great that you're shining the way, like you're living an example through your work, but you have to be transparent and hand that over. And I'm speaking to myself just as I am anyone else.
Mm-hmm.
It's going to take all of us pulling together.
Amen, man. So well said. And can you share some testimonials or examples from some of your customers who were, let's say, on Apple devices or on Android devices that have switched over on Google, like Chromebook?
Yeah.
And have switched over to some of the above products.
Yeah. I mean, someone who's close to us is a marketing lead, Emma, shout out to her. And, so all of her kids are now using above books in school, and it's cool. She's already told me, yeah, they've customized. It looks completely different now. And that's the beauty of Linux. You can make it look and feel how you like. So they already went and played around with it, which is awesome. They even took it to school and they realized, hey, that's not a Chromebook. And so they sent her son to the IT cave in the school, and the IT admin looked at, oh, what's that? Oh, yeah, it's a Linux laptop. It runs Arch Linux. It's got this. And she's like, oh, okay, that's cool. Here, you just need to visit this website. And so now the kids are using it. So kids can use it. I also talked with this young man who's he's 16. He's homeschooled, and he's got Above phone as his first phone, his actual real phone. He's starting to tell his friends about it. He's super excited. He's making presentations and stuff. So, you know, that's the stuff I love to see. Because tech is here to stay, whether you like it or not. Let's work with it in the best ways. Let's inspire kids. On the other end of the spectrum, I mean, you probably know this, like are the community trends older. So we have a lot of expertise working with people who are technologically challenged, as I like to call them. They like to say worse things like tech retarded. It's like, no, 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 not that. You're growing into this, right?
Yeah.
And so we have grandmas who are sending private cryptocurrency transactions.
That's so rad, dude. That's so cool.
I chat with them all the time, and they're figuring stuff out. They're telling us things that we wouldn't have known. So it's really beautiful because there's kind of these open source developers who may not think like they don't have the same ideals as we do, and we're over here using their tools. And above is kind of the bridge. We take kind of the problems and set them up and forward them to the open source developers, and we also support them. We recently gave GrapheneOS $5,000. We give money to all the open source apps we love. So
that's epic.
It's a lot of bridge companies that I think are going to form as a result of this.
And with the data, I feel like we only covered this a little bit, but I just want to reemphasize this point. With the like your data, when it comes to the above products, how is that handled?
Yeah, great question. So one, the phone makes zero connections to big tech, so it's not going to connect to Google or Apple. You can choose to, you can turn it on if you want, but you could also isolate that on a second profile.
Yeah, and that's what you mentioned, like having a second profile that you turn on consciously and turn off.
Exactly. All the junk food's in there. The second thing is that everything on the phone is offline first. So, for instance, your photos and videos, there's no iCloud. There's nothing being saved up to the cloud. There's no AI scanning, which most phones and laptops now are by default. They are using AI to scan your photos. Apple even has enabled it. But like if you could, I could probably show you in your phone where they have turned this on. They're scanning your photos for landmarks.
Dude, I've noticed that when it comes to like them scanning pictures, and if I have photos of my dog, they're like determining what type of dog it is, which means that they're taking my photos and cross-referencing it with something without my consent.
Without your consent.
Yeah.
It goes back to the pre-hacked phone thing. They'll turn on.
Well, maybe it is my consent. That's the thing. It's like I did give consent, but like
in the giant terms of service somewhere. Right, you didn't see this,
right? One small little line that just gives them access to do whatever the hell they want. Essentially,
that's probably in the line. We can do whatever the hell we want, regardless of anything.
Yes, man.
Yeah. So like when it comes to your data, it starts on the phone, right? And all of the apps, most of the apps you can use offline, you can even disconnect them from the internet, which I think is really, really cool.
That's cool.
Yep. So you put it in airplane mode, the phone's not connecting out at all. Our services, we have pretty clear privacy policies. There's things like the messages on XMPP. We store those for 30 days. So when you hop over to a different device, you can get your previous messages. Of course, the messages that are encrypted, we can't even see. So we make reasonable decisions that are between usability and privacy. And more importantly, it's like I trust myself because I know how much work that goes into this stuff. I trust my team. We don't trust any third parties. We can't really speak for what they're doing. So there is no third party third parties involved at all.
That's incredible. That's amazing, man.
Yep.
Yeah. And it makes sense to store it for like 30 days if you're just trying to cross device sync. That makes sense.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Get text messages from other people.
That takes a place of something like iMessage, essentially, like where you can sync across multiple devices. That's cool. Okay, as a final question, and then I just want you to share to the audience after this where they can learn about above. That'll all be in the show notes, but just anything related to that for the WayForward audience. Where is above going? Where do you see above going like 2, 5, 10 years from now?
It's a really good question, man. I think we're just going to continue to build products that are useful, and we're going to be on the cutting edge of all these services. Like I call them public internet utilities. We already have our own search engine, email, calendar, video conferencing, VPN, file sharing service. We're just going to find the next useful service and help build it and help support that. One of the next projects that is on my list is to build an app that actually centralizes it, and not in a bad way, but just makes it accessible from one place, because right now it's decentralized. We want to ensure that people have access to free devices wherever they are, in free communications wherever they are. And eventually we want to have like a basically a box that you can take at home, plug in the power, plug in the internet, and then you're running those services on your own. We're out of the loop, right? You're in custody of your own information, just the same way I can give you some organic heirloom seeds. Here, grow this at home. And that's the way we thrive through this, is not by painting a target on our back, but just growing like mycelium, so pervading everything. So that is the long-term plan. Yeah, I know that's not very clear for us.
No, that's cool. That's cool. That's clear to me.
For us, we don't want to get above like a few hundred thousand users. We'd be happy with that. There's 8 billion people on the planet. I don't want that huge responsibility, right? We're just right. A piece of this.
Right.
Yep.
And if what David Hawkins says is true with respect to the scale of consciousness, all it takes is a few people operating at the higher level of consciousness to overtake or negate the effects of those who are operating at the lower levels anyway. So, I mean, you only need to impact even a small fraction of that 100,000 anyway, but let's hope it gets to 100,000.
So yes, perfectly said. And I will add one more to that. I just want our services to be used to facilitate God meeting God. And in person, this is what it's all about. This technology is not the end all, dude. It's just a bridge to get us there. So more in-person communities happening, more ways to organize our work, can do calculations, whatever, but it should just bring us together.
Amen, man. Cool. Okay. Last thing, where can people learn about Above? Obviously, again, in the show notes, if you have anything special to say to the Way Forward listeners or anything like that.
Yeah. I mean, Way Forward, we love you guys. I've been lurking in your chat. I think you guys are some of the most thoughtful and explorative people I know, which I love. I would love to be at Confluence next year and meet you guys in person. Yeah, we're doing discounts for you guys. Hey, support us, support Alec and the rest of the team. We have a special link. I'm forgetting the link, but it's abovephone.com.
In the show notes somewhere.
We'll have it in the show notes.
Yeah.
Yep. So we'll give you guys $100 off, and we'll have a code in the description.
Awesome.
Yeah. Support you guys. Yeah. Let me see. We also have a Black Friday sale coming up for November. So if you're thinking about getting a phone or a laptop, that would be the best time to get it. I also am going to do a webinar at the end of October. I believe it's the last Wednesday of October, where we just go over everything and I show you, hey, here's what you're going to get. Here's on the phone. Here's what is on the phone. Here's how you're going to use it. So it'll explain everything. So if you want to join me for that, go to abovephone.com/webinar and you can sign up there.
Awesome. Akeem, thank you so much, man. This was epic.
Thanks, bro.